really, what are the things you're going to hold them accountable to is what we try to put on that fort.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Coach Darnell, welcome to the Hoop Nerds.
Hey, Billy, thanks for having me, and glad to be here.
I'm happy to talk to you. Let's hit the rewind button, maybe back before our time knowing each other, and tell me about the first time you coached something, anything, and a story that sticks with you from that experience.
Oh, man. Billy, I think it might have been after we met. I've known you a long time now. Shoot, I don't know if there's something before. One of the memories that comes to me most of like really coaching something would be when I was a camp counselor at my alma mater at Eureka College. So Coach Wilde would have us help in the camps. And I remember getting so into it. We did the continuous 3-on-2, 2-on-1. We call it, I don't know what you call it. Call it the 11-man drill because you have the 11 lines, 11 guys going or whatever at once. And so I was so excited. Still to this day is like one of my favorite drills. And I got all the kids lined up into it. And you know me, I'm energetic and excited about it, you know. And so I'm putting all the energy into it. And kids are doing it. And I just remember at the end of the day, I had no voice. So it was like one of my first times. It sticks out because of how into it I got and how I got all the kids organized at the camp, and they were able to follow instructions and get them to, you know, do that drill. And then the fact that I didn't have a voice, I couldn't even talk at the end. So that's probably the memory that sticks out the most of one of the first times coaching something.
All right. So from that point, walk me through your coaching journey briefly and how you got to where you are now.
It's crazy. It's been over 12 years now in this business, but I didn't know I always wanted to get into coaching. You know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, shoot, they're in high school or junior high and they're like, I'm going to be a coach, you know, and some know before they even get into college. I just wanted to play. I was playing at a D3 liberal arts school and enjoying my experience. And between my sophomore and junior year, I finally realized that I probably wasn't going to make money playing basketball. So I was finally starting to think about other things, even though I was enjoying my college experience. And I was able to occur. It was called a Sandifer Fellowship, where the school I went to, if you met certain criteria, they paid for like basically internships over the summer. And I was still thinking about potentially going into like law school when I finished. And I knew I wanted to be involved in sports, but I didn't know how or what. And so I was looking at doing like sports law or something. And there's some connections I had in Chicago and maybe getting internships. But everything that came to fruition ended up being with coaching. I worked with Rand Chappell. He's a longtime coach. He was at Central Arkansas at the time. I did camps there, went out to the Hoop Group and did camps. So I was doing all this stuff that ended up being with coaching. And, you know, my family has a background in it. My uncle's an NAI Hall of Fame coach. My dad coached. And so I finished college and I'm trying to figure things out. And everything kind of lined up to do that. And so I started with my former college coach, who's now coaching at a high school. And he helped his varsity team as like a varsity assistant my first year out of college while I went to grad school. And then I got my foot in the door at Bradley, and it was because of a relationship through my uncle and my dad with Jim Less, who was a former NBA player, and he was a head coach at Bradley at the time. I was able to get on as a video coordinator there through my connection with him. You know, and then after that, after you get your foot in the door, you know, it's really about your work ethic. You know, for me, when you don't have a playing pedigree, you got to work the ground up, you know, and there's no A to B and B to C in this business. And I learned real quick of how that was going to work out for me. And so, you know, I started and went to the Division I level off the bat. And then I took a job at UW-Platteville. And every job that I've taken has really been through connections. And, you know, that job at UW-Platteville, I went to Division III. And so, like I said, there's no, you know, get this promotion. And it really how it works in this business. And so, you know, I've been blessed to work at all three levels. I worked at Platteville, which is Division III, Chico State, which is Division II. And now I'm back at Eastern Washington, which is Division I. And I'm just thankful for all my experiences. They've all helped me grow as a coach in different ways. And I've learned from some tremendous head coaches. I mean, I would say a lot of these guys are going to be in Hall of Fames, their Hall of Fames. So really thankful. I've learned a lot of different philosophies from these head coaches that I've worked for, and tremendous people, you know, that have allowed me to, you know, care about my family and my stuff off the floor too, which is really neat to have and sometimes hard to have in this business. So, yeah, that's kind of my journey. I'm at Eastern Washington now, and it's funny I say that because Coach Riley, he actually started at Eastern Washington as a GA, and he did do that. He became the ops guy, then an assistant, associate head coach, and a head coach all in the same school, and he might be the only one ever I've heard of that in this deal. So, but it's very rare to see that.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning of your coaching career. Tell me about an idea or theory you really believed in as a younger coach that now with experience and time, you've changed your mind on and have switched the direction in which you teach or you approach, whatever that is.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if it's an idea or philosophy, but you know, one thing for me, and I think this could be interesting for some, especially younger coaches starting that would listen to this, is I'll talk about scouting reports. So when I first started and I got to do one of my first scouts when I was at UC Davis, I couldn't have put more words in that scout, Billy. I mean, I wrote a book. I mean, I wrote a novel, you know, and I put so much on that. If we win or lose this game, it's because of my scouting report, you know? And so I wanted to watch all the film and I want to be super detailed. And I wanted to put all this effort in and show that I know what I'm talking about. And I know this and I know it. And I'm going to tell them all, you know, but really it came down. I had too many, you know, there was too much information, you know, and you can, really what it taught me as I've gotten now, you know, experience now, in coaching is, you know, really less is more, you know, and you find that out in your own way that just because you know, it doesn't mean that the players you're coaching are going to know it. So you got to do it in a way where they're really understanding the information. I think scouting reports is a great way because it's such a short turnaround. They go from one game to the next and you've got to be able to enlighten them on this team and really show them what are the important factors to help win the game, but not, you know, dilute them and give them too much information. And so I think from early on in my career where I was like, I was so stressed over putting so much detail and really trying to show that I knew all this information, to now where I'm at, where it's like, no, you know, really bullet pointing stuff and highlighting things that are going to be important and keys to really winning this game. And then translating it to them to make sure that they understand it. I've really learned and gotten better at how to do that.
So what are some of those vehicles that you use to get the points across to them, whether it's paper copy, digital copy, video, whatever it is, in order to get the main points, the less is more points across to them?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of different platforms and softwares and video softwares that you can use now, and some still use homemade reports. You know, we're lucky we have a service that we use, but what we try to do is just try to minimize. We try to really minimize details of talking about individual players, just really highlighting, you know, what they are about, what they want to do, you know. And for us, it's simplifying whether, you know, they're a really good shooter, you know, and you can't let him shoot, or, you know, guy that you want to play for his drive, and just as simple as a strong hand and knowing what hand to shade. And, you know, I think, just giving the basic information, maybe one go-to move, you know. And then as far as how to guard them, we do another category of how to guard them is just really keeping it simple, which way you want to send a guy and how you want to defend him with his shot, and making, you know, post guys or strong shoulders. But for us, it's that we call that A, because it's the most important thing of our defense. You know, a lot of people are set baseline and do different things. And so for us, a strong hand is very important. And so we really emphasize that. And, you know, we hold our guys accountable to that. So really, what are the things you're going to hold them accountable to is what we try to put on that report. And that's how we try to minimize it. But, you know, we also do it then through video. And through video, you can't put 15, 20 clips on a guy. You know, that's just too much. And so we try to put the bare essentials of what you're talking about in the report and reflect that now on the video that shows, no, this is when they're at their best, this is what they're doing. And you only need 5 or 6 clips to do that, you know, and get a feel for that. So those are some ways we do it. And then on the floor, you know, executing, you know, the main schemes offensively and defensively, the 3 or 4 big things of what makes them unique and how we need to defend them or how we need to attack them.
Yeah, what makes them unique, I think, is to point out the highlights. But I'm curious about the scouting report and when you're identifying whether someone is an attacker, a face-up, whatever their categorization may be, is there some sort of way that you identify it with them? And here's my example for you. When I was coaching, it was a Kobe, a Rondo, or an Allen. So a Ray Allen was a catch-and-shoot guy, right? A Kobe was a player. And then a Rondo was back off and let him shoot. So those were our identifiers. And then in practice, we had pennies for colors. You know, Rondo was on the Celtics, so he was green, right? So on and so forth. So I'm curious if you have any, like, unique terminology that you guys use to help identify some of those things.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who's in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
Yeah, that's great. I love those. So, well, we came here. Yeah, we've come up with our own. You know, we've used Curry's, DeMar DeRozan, kind of a guy that can, you know, make a three, but also can do mid range and get to the basket, kind of a more of a three level type guy. You know, and then a Ben for Ben Simmons that can't shoot at all, right? So I know it's gosh, but you know, so you come up with different names. Everyone has them. I've heard hot clothes, normal clothes, cold clothes. As far as just really determining your closeouts, you know, just there's a lot of different ways, different programs categorize guys like that. You know, in practice, a lot of teams will just highlight their shooters, right? So they're Iversons, right? There's catch and shoot guys or, you know, Curry's that you don't want to allow to shoot threes. And then the other guys you got to identify differently. I like that. The color of the jersey to go along with that. That's issue. And especially when you're teaching it early on, maybe not even in season, that can help guys identify so they know when they're going out to these guys in a closeout situation to help start trigger that before you just label players in games. Yeah, that's interesting.
So let's talk about a cold closeout, or to me, that would be a Rondo, right? Somebody who's not necessarily a shooter, right, but an attacker. So that can be a tricky situation because they have a head of steam coming at you as you're on your heels. So what sorts of tips and tricks can you give somebody on a cold closeout to help them contain that driver dribbler?
Yeah, so we always talk about having an act. So just because you're closing a little bit shorter, you understand that you're doing that. So if you're closing out, if you're mentally locked in that I know I'm playing the drive, then you could still have a great act. So we talk about here at Eastern about having a great act, you know. So, you know, breaking down your feet and stunting at the guy, still throwing your hands up, but you're closing out a little bit. You're quite a bit shorter, so you don't get beat off the dribble. Now, once you've done close, that's for the closeout piece. You know, we still shade certain distance with our hands. Once you have, you're just got a live ball dribble, but you're set on the ball. That's where you don't want to just give them two, you know, three full arm lengths to just let them back up and attack you. Cause you're right. You know, a guy gets a head of steam, especially at this level, it's advantage offense, you know, and it's hard to stop a guy that's got a head of steam. So, you know, we always just talk about having an act.
So with somebody like a Curry, where you know you need to stay attached, what sorts of things are you talking about with off-ball help? So your player doesn't have the ball, right? What sort of distancing, timing? I always use the word stay attached, right? Stay attached to that player, depending on what they are. What sorts of things for shooters are you talking about?
Well, we still want to be in our normal help positioning, even off of Curry's. You know, we're still a protect the basket first team. And so we're looking at crackbacks and rotations. Crackbacks for us are like, you know, if there's a guy under the basket and one of our guys rotates out, we still got to attach to that guy. We still got to cover that guy up over giving up a three. And now you got to make second efforts and rotate. You know, obviously a lot of people's rotations, however they work, whatever their defensive schemes is, to come out then. And that's where you got to understand where they're at, right? And then we talk a lot about distance principle. So like, if you're digging on the post, but you're guarding a Curry, well, you got to understand how close you are, and having, you can still have your act, but you can't just give up that three. You know, we're still in good positioning behind the man to guard the post. Well, we don't want to just give up rhythm threes while we're digging too. So we talk a lot about distance principle, but we don't sacrifice giving up twos. We protect the basket first, play inside out. We want them, instead of being out in out, we just want them in, get to the right positioning. So then all you got to do is start rotating and get out.
Yeah. Decisiveness in decision-making, it sounds like. Don't be in between land.
100%.
All right. So let's move away from X and O stuff. And what you're doing is taking young men and turning them into adults, you know, whether they go on to play professionally in basketball or they move into the professional world elsewhere. What's something that you've done with your teams or you want to do with your teams that you think makes the biggest positive impact for them moving into their adulthood and maturing?
I just think in athletics in general, you know, individuals having to deal with adversity, you know, you don't always get that in the academic realm. And so your student athletes, they're being challenged, obviously, in the classroom, but you're being challenged with how you work with other people, how you work with your teammates, how you respond to hard coaching, how you respond to, you know, maybe not getting your way, maybe, you know, not getting as much playing time as you want or getting as many shots as you want. And so for individuals to have to deal with those circumstances on a day in and day out basis, that's a huge thing that's going to help them for when the ball stops bouncing and for them in their lives, that they're going to have gone through a lot of those challenges to get that out of them and to learn a lot about themselves. I think a lot from us and what I've learned, you know, in coaching that I think really helps these guys, and it helps them deal with that stuff and learn more about themselves, is transparency. You know, when you beat around it and you don't get to the point or you're not real with guys, one, they can sniff it out a lot of times. And two, you're not helping them and helping them deal with reality. You know, we talk a lot about here about being in reality, and we use video, we use stats, we use just instances of, you know, responses and being able to communicate with our guys and, hey, this is it. There's nothing to think about that's outside. This is it. And so I think transparency, and for kids can handle it if you're real with them. They know they're not gonna they don't have an excuse. If you're completely real, they're not gonna think otherwise. And so I really think transparency and the ability to help, you know, these young men live in reality helps them deal with everything that they've got going on. It builds trust, and it helps them learn about themselves to help them for, you know, life after college or life after they're done playing basketball.
All right. You hit a buzz thing here for me, because transparency is a big buzzword right now. We need to be transparent in everything we do. And I would agree with that, but turning that into practical use is not as simple. So I'm curious if you have an example without sharing names that you could talk about, a situation where an individual was struggling, you had a conversation, and what the transparency sake was, which helped them come out on the other side for the positive.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about these buzz where like everyone want to talk about accountability,
culture.
Transparency's next, man. So yeah, a good one. You know, this happens. This has happened more than once. I think this is a big one. A guy that's struggling, a guy that's playing but not playing well. And so it's, you know, being able to have statistics from practice. It's being able to show them in the games that, listen, you're just not playing well right now. This guy's playing really well. And so we're not ignoring it. You know, some coaches, they'll flat out just, all right, go sit on the bench, you know, come to practice and not even address it or talk to you about it. But we're still here trying to help you. And we think that you can still help us, but you're not playing well. And so here, this is what we need from you. We need A, we need B, we need C. Can you do that for us? Is that something you're capable of doing? And I'm not talking about making 10 shots a game, not talking about taking this, I'm talking about stuff that can really help him get out of his slump. And that's, can you sit down and guard the ball for us? Can you rebound? Can you go get a few more rebounds? Can you, you know, run the offense with fluidity and be ready, you know, toes to the 3-point line to shoot your rhythm three, you know, and give them, you know, three tangible things that can help them. But to not address it with them, to let them sit there and not understand what's going on. And hey, I'm more talented than this guy. Well, yeah, but you may be, but you're not playing well. And so how can we help you get out of it? Can we talk about it? Can we give you some tangible things that you can help, you know, get yourself out of this funk and get better?
So if you give them A, B, and C, what's the follow-up process look like for A, B, and C with that player?
It starts at practice, right? So you're talking about, hey, we just talked about you rebounding and you're not checking out. You're not going to the offensive glass. You got to be one of our best offensive rebounders. And you see it in practice. Well, you got to talk to him about that when he's not going now. You can't just bring those things up and then not talk about, you know, those things you're emphasizing with him to help your team in practice. And so to me, that's really where it starts. And then, you know, when it comes to a game time and him getting that next opportunity, it's reminding him of those things. Dude, listen, I'm not worried about anything else besides these things we taught you. You got to do these things. It'll let you help you get into this game and start getting us some, you know, production to help you get out of this deal, you know, and to help our team.
All right. Let's wrap up with a non-basketball related question. I've known you long enough that it's fun for me to make you squirm. So use your imagination a bit. If you look inside a refrigerator and you open that door and you look inside, what one item inside that refrigerator best identifies with who you are as a person and why?
Billy, I've listened to some of your other episodes and I always like, I don't even know what I would say for that. Oh man. All right. So, All right. Hey, I got one. All right. I got one. One, because it's one of my favorite things in the fridge. So I'm going to rock with it. I'm going to go with ranch. I'd say I identify most with ranch. And the reason why is because what does everyone say about ranch? Ranch goes good with everything, you know, and I just feel like I'm a very, you know, my over 12 years now doing this deal, I think I'm very adaptable to my surroundings. I work well with others. I've been a part of, you know, quite a few different staffs now and built some really, really great relationships. You know, just like ranch can go on carrots and ranch, you know, can be, you know, for some people, ranch can be put on burgers. You know, I'm very relatable to my players, and I can get along with a lot of different people.
Are we still doing the ranch and barbecue sauce mixed together thing?
No, hey, that's McDonald's, and that's a Lake Mills thing, and that's barbecue and mayonnaise at McDonald's. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I had my white socks mixed up. I apologize to all the Lake Mills people out there going
that's
off of 994.
Maybe that's why we were a little bit slow to start every game for our having, you know, barbecue and mayonnaise mix for our fries at McDonald's is probably not the best pregame choice.
We'll go with that excuse. Coach Darnell, thanks for coming on the Hoop Nerds. Thanks for sharing with us and best of luck this season.
Thanks, Billy. It was great joining you.
I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I am very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase.